Well, I guess we can get started, sure. You
Yeah.
want to moderate this, or you want to just
I
get more
guess.
freestyle, or?
Well, it's just the two of us. We really need to moderate. I
Yeah.
can. I'll attempt to
Rock, paper,
moderate, I
scissors.
guess.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll attempt. I've never done it, so I'll give it a shot. All right, welcome to the Guerrilla Marketing and Promotion panel. How's everyone doing this morning?
It's not bad.
Is everyone awake? Hey, Bill, how's it going?
Hey, no, no groans.
That's
That's
good.
good on Sunday
My
morning.
name's Daniel J. Hogan, not David J. Hogan, as the program says. There was a bit of a mix-up, so my evil twin is not here today. I'm the author of the book Magic of Aerie. It's a fantasy comedy book, and I self-published it last year. So since then, I've kind of had a crash course in self-promotion, advertising, marketing. I've learned a lot since last May when it comes to that. And go ahead.
My name's Rick Jackson, aka The Time Traveler. I have an audiobook company called Wonder Audio, which publishes vintage science fiction and other genres. Right now, I'm concentrating on science fiction. I also have a podcast, part of the guerrilla marketing, you could say, called The Time Traveler Show, which has guest readers read vintage science fiction. I'm going to be doing a show at 10 o'clock today with Werner Vinge. He's going to do a reading and short interview, so I hope you can come to that too.
What room is that in?
Yeah, it's not in the program.
Yeah, Ballroom A,
Okay.
I think.
Yeah.
The big
Yeah.
room. The
Just
big room.
follow you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We just want to.
You want to define what guerrilla marketing is?
Okay, yeah, that works. Guerrilla marketing to me is just stuff you kind of do in the background or that people don't realize is actually marketing or advertising or stuff you kind of do independently or, hit and run type stuff. Just, little things. Like yesterday, I was wearing one of my promo shirts. I probably should have worn it today. It made more sense. But it has the Magic of Aerie logo on here and some of the artwork from the back right here on the breast pocket. It's got the website on the back of it. And just wearing that around, people see it and hopefully, connect the dots. And that's how I approach guerrilla marketing, just stuff I can do relatively easily and inexpensively, because that's the trick too, because you can spend a lot on advertising and that's where you really have to be careful if you're doing it independently. I mean, if you have an advertising budget and you work for like a big company, that's a different story. But if you're like a guy like me, this is a side project hobby thing, $20 for something is a lot of money, because if I spend $20 a month, that adds up, or $20 a week on advertising, that adds up really quick, because I don't really make much doing this, so I got to be really careful. So guerrilla marketing to me is stuff I can do easily and affordably and still get the message out.
Okay, I would define it as like a non-traditional form of marketing. It doesn't follow the traditional channels of marketing. So it's usually more creative. It's usually less expensive. And the trade-off of that, a lot of times, it's more time-consuming. You know, you could throw bucks at an advertising campaign and have someone else do it, and it could cost a lot of money. Or you can do something creative. It doesn't cost a lot of money. And if it reaches your target market, like I have the podcast, it features short stories, and that's what I publish mainly, publish some novels. And it's more of a gateway. It's free. People can go online, they can listen to it online, or they can download it as a podcast, however they want to listen to it. And that's kind of the gateway drug into buying the product. And on the podcast, of course, I mentioned the audiobook company and get people in that way.
And some stuff I do, like kind of like that, on my website, I have the first four chapters for free that you can read as a way to kind of hook people. Because I'm self-published, the main way you can buy my book is through my website or Amazon or Barnes and Noble's website. You can't really go into a Barnes and Noble and it'll be on the shelf. Although I did get lucky once, and there was one in Grosse Pointe because they found out I was from the area originally. They ordered a few and had a couple in there and asked me to come in and sign them for them. But that's like really rare. So my internet sales and convention sales are my main market. So that's why I do a lot of internet stuff. That's why I'm on Facebook, MySpace, LiveJournal, YouTube, Twitter. I'm on all these websites just to kind of get my name and message out there. And hopefully people come to my site, like what they see, or at least come back and visit. That's why I have a blog on magicofairy.com and danieljhogan.com. It's just my live journal that's embedded in the front page, because hopefully people will keep coming back and read all my different misadventures of self-promotion and writing, and maybe buy the book out of pity or something, or whatever. But I do other non-traditional things too. Well, I think non-traditional, but hey, Freon.
How's it going?
Good.
Speaking of acidic. Sorry, guys.
It's all right.
Ill, waking up late, missed breakfast. And
okay. Well, one thing.
I did the program book, and then oh my God, 9 o'clock. What?
Who scheduled this?
For my heart. For my heart.
One thing I decided to do early on to help get sales or get more notice was there's a local zoo in Lansing where I'm from. So I said on my website, whenever I sell a certain amount of copies, I'll adopt an animal at the zoo. And the zoo loved that, obviously, because I talked to them about it. And they just like, you know, people adopting animals anyway. So the fact that I was a local author and using as a way as promotion, they like that. So I've adopted 3 so far, and I have a 4th I have to adopt because I broke 100 copies, so I got to adopt another animal. Mm-hmm. And Bill,
they just got a baby camel.
All right, well, maybe I'll have to adopt that. I'll see how much it costs. That's the other thing too.
Yeah. So how big a Yorkie you have?
Not that big. All I have is a Saturn Ion, so I can't fit more than maybe a couple of penguins and a pelican. That's about it.
I just saw Fierce Creatures too, so now I'm going to think about you every time I see that movie. John Cleese wandering around. What am I going to do with all of these animals that I told everybody that I'd shot?
And some other things I do. Like I get these cards printed up, and I always have these on me in my wallet, or if I'm at like a meet and greet type thing. If I'm wearing a blazer, I'll have some in my pocket, just because, especially my wallet, because I could just be at work or some random thing, and someone will say, "Oh yeah, this is Dan. He wrote a book." And like, "Oh, what do you write?" Instead of me having to explain it, like, "Here you go. This is it. You know, it's got the website on it." That's another thing I'm going to touch on. Anything you give out, be it, you know, cards, you know, buttons, T-shirts, flyers, whatever, put your website on it if you have a website, because that's what you want people to do is go to your website. I'm sure you can definitely relate to that with your podcast stuff. And I did these buttons too. I did these through Cafe Press. You know, they work. People like buttons, and they're free giveaways. They cost a little more than I would have liked to, but, you know, people like them. And, you know, they have the website on them, or they at least have the title of the book so they could Google it or something. And I don't know, or free on
why don't anymore. We go ahead and introduce yourself?
Yeah.
I'm relatively new at guerrilla marketing. The guerrilla suit's still at the cleaners from the last time I tried doing anything like this. But to introduce myself, you probably all know me. I've been to conventions for about 20 years. And I do have a book that I'm trying to sell, but I'm not much of a guerrilla about it because, as I know, I don't like to offend a whole bunch of friends. It's a short story collection. I'm self-publishing right now. I'm currently working on several projects, including, one, maybe 2 screenplays, a novel-length work, and I know better than to try to self-publish anything that's longer than the short stories that I have, because I basically have a kind of a philosophy about that. I try to go as far as reaching out, you know, locally. Gain myself a name for things other than the book, and at the end of the day, you can say, "Oh, and I, by the way, I write." And everybody's like, "Well, you know, this is a science fiction convention. You know, that we actually do celebrate literature. So, what do you write?" And it flows from there, basically. Mm-hmm. What I do is I try to establish my worth outside the book that I wrote. I mean, what Dan was talking about as far as philanthropic activities and getting his name out for being a nice and generous person, and in his local fandom or in his local area, mm-hmm. it's exactly right on.
Yeah.
Everything that you do, with the exception of actually going out and buying your promotional materials, is promoting yourself as yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So if you say, "Hey, buy this book, it's a really good story," that's one thing. But if you say, "Buy this book because I know him personally and he's a really, really great guy and he's only trying to get off the ground," mm-hmm. and if you have a couple of extra bucks, buy a copy. That works wonders, incredible wonders of word of mouth. Say, I mean, if everybody knows that Dan is a cool guy, and he is an absolutely cool guy who photographs people when they have mouths half full of food,
I only did
and
that
posts
once.
The pictures on the web.
I only did that once.
And you can accept that kind of candid humor. Maybe you can buy his book, too, because he really does. It's all worth it what he does.
Yeah.
So, and the same for me. I mean, I get to do all of the stuff that I really, really like to do. Everybody knows me for the way I am, and I also know that I have a lot of respect for their standards, and you guys' standards of science fiction literature are very, very high. So there's no way that I can, you know, I can schmooze you into getting something. I mean, I'm not buying my way to the bestseller list. There are a lot of people, there are a lot of books out there that they're horrible, and then they're doing themselves a disservice by using where they are to try to sell the books. I'm kind of on the opposite. I say, this is really good. You would tell me if it wasn't, because you're a discriminating audience. I started with you guys. So I'm at an advantage that way, because you guys have established yourselves as a discriminating audience, and so I have to. It's uphill if I have to lie, but if I tell the truth, it's easy. It comes pretty pretty natural. So I have an easy time of it.
Okay. I think an important point that he brings up is that you need to network with your audience as much as you can.
Yep.
Cons like this for us works great.
Mm-hmm.
The web is the great equalizer. You know, mm-hmm. get your stuff out on the web. Connect with other news groups that have the same interests as what you're trying to promote, but don't just put advertising on news groups.
Have it as an afterthought. Say, you know, and by the way, I'm a writer, of course, because we're all writers. You know?
Put it in the tagline or something.
Yeah, in the bottom.
After your signature.
I have a website that says the book's for sale, but I also make announcements from time to time that have absolutely nothing to do with the book. I don't talk about the stories or anything like that unless I'm at a convention.
You run a news group, right?
The MichiganFandom.org, and I have like half a dozen internet or community or I hesitate to say social networking, but social networks that are even older yet than the new stuff that's out there. But it's low maintenance. A lot of people communicate with each other. But I tend to, when you talk about being a guerrilla about it, there are times when you really, really want to say something about the stuff that you're doing, but it's their community.
Mm-hmm.
So and the first thing first, it's not, you're not going to want to step on a soapbox and say, hey, you know, the only reason you're here is because I put it together. This is my website, and you want to exercise some kind of control. No. I mean, that's basically it. You get in touch with 200 people, you bring them in with a small bit of interest, and then it mushrooms from that. It gets bigger than you. It gets beyond you. So I become smaller after that.
Mm-hmm. I became acquainted with sffaudio.com, which is a news blog website that does science fiction fantasy audio. And they just do reviews and review podcasts and news items, and I became a reviewer, and then now I'm a senior editor there. And
wow.
that opened up a lot of doors, because, you know, you get people sending emails talking about, you know, authors and stuff, send us stuff and say, hey, how do I hook up with an audiobook company? And that just opened a lot of doors. Plus, it gets my name out there, and it links back to everything else I'm doing on the web.
Yeah.
And then there's always, you know, business cards. That's a traditional one.
Mm-hmm.
I did ribbons this time. Yes.
That's what I should have done.
I missed the ribbon boat altogether, so I had to find a different avenue. I bribed a friend of mine to get me buttons, custom buttons,
mm-hmm.
A few custom buttons. And, you know, I mean, there's always, if you're really, really late, it gets really, really expensive.
Yep.
If anybody's ever published a program book for a convention,
mm-hmm.
that's the way things go. Mm-hmm. But, you know, a lot of planning ahead of time and some real savvy as far as what you can get away with. Your color cards and stuff, and the press copies that Lulu puts out—that's pretty cool. The press
mm-hmm.
kits that they offer.
Yes, those are very nice.
They're putting their heads together. They know exactly what they're mm-hmm. they're gunning for, so
mm-hmm.
they'll give you oftentimes, more often than not, exactly what you need.
Another thing, like I do, is I donate copies of the book to local libraries, and usually they're more than happy to take a free book, because, you know, they especially like it if you're the author, although I've gone and said, I'm a local author, can I donate my book? And they're kind of flabbergasted at first. They're like, oh, okay, sure. And, you know, once they realize I'm not pulling their leg, then they're happy to take it.
I'm kind of surprised in recent years that people are starting to get, like, I mean, bookstores, you really couldn't come in and say, I'm a local author here, you
mm-hmm.
know, and market the book. You can go to a library and you say, here, I'm a local author, I'd like to donate the book. You always get an element, or you have a little bit of surprise going. But I've always wondered, in the next 4 or 5 years or so, or even in the past 4 or 5 years, now with a lot of books starting to flood the market, either self-published or, I mean, like you were saying,
mm-hmm.
everybody is saying that the playing field is level. The interesting thing is there will always be interest in the local libraries. The librarian will always be surprised that a local author is going to want to donate books or do a reading, or, you know, go down to Redford and speak in front of people like your reading group, like I had done. I mean, I didn't sell copy there, and I wasn't intending to, because I had a writing workshop going also, and we were trying to do a little bit of intermingling of concepts. But anytime you do a cultural outreach, whether or not it is for your own particular gain, as long as you're doing something that you know you're interested in, everybody wins.
Mm-hmm.
And you're accidentally moving yourself ahead and getting people to recognize you and know you for far more things than just the writing or the book that you have for sale. So it's like you're, once again, giving of yourself, and just the fringe benefit is that everybody knows you.
Yeah,
and everybody, you take advantage of that even without trying. It makes things very, very easy that way.
And one of the libraries I donate a copy to, they contacted me this week. They want me to come in August and be on a panel about self-publishing. Yeah. So that's, you know, one of the benefits too. And I always tell them, you know, any library I donate to, I say, you want me to come in for anything, you don't have to, you know, pay me or whatever. I don't have to sell copies. I'll mm-hmm. come in and just talk. That's fine.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I also pitch to bookstores, because the chain bookstores, especially with me being self-published, are very, very iffy about me coming in.
Yeah, there's...
Because they have to buy, because my stuff's printed on demand, they have to buy all the copies up front, and they can't necessarily return them. So I'll say, I'll come in and just talk, or I'll bring my own books to sell, which they don't necessarily like either, but, you know.
Yeah, walk into a bookstore with your own stock of books.
They don't really like that
either. Cash register.
Yeah. I mean,
you have a busking permit.
I will tell you, the indie bookstores, the mom and pop shops, where they're really small, they are very, very open doing stuff. I've had the joy of working with a couple in the Lansing area, and that's where I had my first signing, was at one in Lansing, because I just, again, friend of a friend type of situation. I work with someone who was friend with, who knew the owner of the bookstore, and we went in and talked. Said, you know, Dan has a book. It's like, oh, well, do you want to do a signing? I'm like, absolutely. And that's just, you know, how it goes from there. And another case in point, I have another friend who's friends with a bookstore in Mason, Bestseller Books, and that's how I was able to do a signing there. Last month, just, you know, networking and knowing people is a very valuable asset. And another piece of advice, to steal Will Wheaton's quote, don't be a dick when it comes to this type of stuff. If you're really, you know, nasty or mean or overly aggressive, that can turn people off. You're just nice and pleasant, you know, and respectful.
I mean,
they remember that.
Being arrogant, being a prima donna, that's mm-hmm. stuff of the people in the bestseller end
yes.
of things, wherein you can afford to turn mm-hmm. people off, because that actually is... What you're doing is you're reinforcing a fandom, or you're reinforcing an us and them fandom
mm-hmm.
mentality. It does exist, okay. But if you're really, really big, you don't care. you're only going to travel out to a convention that offers you a room, and there's certain things that it's kind of protocol.
Yeah.
But we're starting at the ground. At the ground level with that, so we kind of eschew that. We say, no, that's not how we're going to do. We're going to be a little bit more approachable than that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's okay to be, we're the people in the first base kind of area, and people at third base are on a strata above us. And,
yeah.
You know, they're the higher than nifty, the niftier than thou level, I guess you could call them. So,
Bill, you have a question?
But how do you get to that level? Like, if you don't have, like, a national marketing budget or something, but you want to be on a bestseller list, or you want to get to that point?
Just keep trying.
Do it on the cheap?
You have consistently good work.
Yeah.
Continue to do it. Word of mouth gets around, and suddenly people recognize you. And the next thing you know, the right people will be contacting your people, and you'll be at that point where your underlings and your toadies are going to be dicks.
Yeah.
And you won't be.
Yeah.
And you won't be. Okay, I mean, you could say that about a bunch of this. The winning combination when you're actually on the large mass market and you're just gigantic, you know. If you're, I'm not thinking about Oprah's people, because we've found out that most of them are also fiction writers. So, what I mean specifically is that you get to maintain the mythology that you're a really good person,
mm-hmm.
despite the fact that the people that you necessarily have to get to work for you can be more and more distant from the fandom. So
yeah.
You start to become epic. You're mythological, you know. And then the millions of people that know you say, oh, he's really a nice guy. The people who work under him are dicks.
Yeah.
So, I mean, And then you end up with also half of the people talking about things like, oh, he's really a dick. But you wouldn't know it from the things that he does in public. So that little bit of mystique, it works for you because people are still talking about you. Mm-hmm. And you're a household name. So you really don't care whether they like you or not because your books are sold. They're bought and sold. They're already paid for. So you get yourself the advance and you get yourself the contract and the 3-book deal and everybody is talking about you. And you haven't even finished the 3rd book, and people are already touting it as the next big thing. Have you ever wondered about that? You know, and that's the thing that we're up against. You see, mm-hmm. it's not so much the quality of the book; it's the amount of spread your name gets. And that's pretty much the name of the game. There are 2 ways to do it. One is to be genuine, and mm-hmm. the other is to pay to make people think you're genuine.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we're at the other end.
Some of those books, when you go to like a Barnes & Noble, like in the big displays, they're paying for that shelf space when it comes to the big upfront things. You know, and people on the indie level, we can't do that. I tried to, I contacted Barnes & Noble's small press department, and because once in a while they'll take stuff that's small press and carry it in the stores and send them all the info they needed, and they sent me back a nice letter saying that we don't do self-published print-on-demand stuff because they only sell about 100 copies, and mostly that's to your mom
store
and dad.
Policies,
yeah,
stuff like that. Yeah,
but you know, at least I'm trying. You know, and that's just what you got to do. And I found out about that again from a friend of a friend. I met someone who it's like, oh, this is Dan. He wrote a book. It's like, oh, well, I used to work at the Barnes & Noble in East Lansing with the community relations person. Here's her card. Tell her you know me, and you know that opened a door for me. And she's the one that gave me the info to contact Barnes & Noble's small press department. You know, nothing came of it, but, you know, I tried. Do you have anything else you want to...
work.
Yeah, do you have anything else you want to say, and then we can open it up for questions?
I was going to talk about new campaigns when you get a marketing idea. It's a good idea to write down everything you can think of,
mm-hmm.
and then do a small test. You know, just do a small market test and see if it looks like it's going to fly or not before you invest all this time and maybe money also. Mm. And just have it all fall apart.
Yeah,
that can be very discouraging. Right now, one thing I'm doing, and I'm opening it up to you, Penguin Con Special, is anybody who has a blog, podcast, traditional media that want free copies of my audiobooks, all you got to do is sign up, let me know, and I'll send you an MP3 file. And then you can listen to it. Only thing I ask you to do is mention it in your blog, however you want, and put the link to my website. And I did this to a couple people that I saw writing about audiobooks, and they were more than happy to take them and listen to them, and they wrote really nice reviews. And then I got to post them on my website. So it's a free thing, and it works out for everybody. Look for win-win situations. If you're working with other people, promote them too, because it's only going to help you.
Oh, yeah. If you don't, you're a dick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're a dick.
Yeah. So if you have a website, link other people. I mean, and because the way, you know, sites like Google work, if someone's searching for someone you have on your website might also show up too, you know. So that's why, at least I think that's how it works. You know, I don't know. It's all based on how many links to your website there are and whatever.
Find me with my mouth half full of food. It's just totally entertaining.
I thought I took that. I don't remember that picture.
No, you should probably. No, I think it's probably in there. No, maybe it was Anne that had
it. I think it was Anne.
She doesn't have a book, so that's okay.
Everybody's got a picture of you with your mouthful.
Well, I got... Don't worry. I got...
Sorry.
I got plenty of embarrassing pictures of myself on my website, so that's okay. So
YouTubex.com.
Jeez. Questions at all? I mean, is there anything specific you want us to talk about?
Just out of curiosity, the reason I just ask is because a lot of times I have to fight filters with a completely full a box. If you don't have your own website and you don't think you'd be reliable enough to get to every fan that would email you or something like that, is it possible just to succeed on a non-internet basis, or nowadays is that just fans?
Yeah,
very, very easy to.
Yeah.
Only in the last 15 years have people started to use the internet the way it's supposed to, or the way to its full extent as a marketing tool. Rowling was one of the first people to actually have a banner ad for a book. And that's what, I mean, I like to say that Harry Potter was a really, really popular and a well-written series, It probably was. But the bottom line, as far as I'm concerned with Rowling, was she was the first person that I can think of that actually advertised online in banner ads for a book. A book, not a movie, not a TV show. And that, for 4 years, I was like watching the banner ads crawl against it. And I thought to myself, Harry Potter, maybe I should probably wait a minute. I'm an author. Why don't I do stuff like that? And it was too late. It was 5 years after that. And it's like, as far as I'm concerned, she was taking advantage of the fact that no one's really done it. But I'll give you a case in point. When in 1981, L. Ron Hubbard started to put out radio ads for Battlefield Earth, I thought it was a movie coming out. This was 1982, 1983. And then after that, it was Dianetics and all of that stuff like that. Okay. Granted, there was a lot of money involved in putting a radio ad out for Battlefield Earth, mm-hmm. but it was a book. How many people get radio ads out about books? And he did it, and that thing was monstrous. Because, okay, it cost a lot of money, but the return was like, God, I can't wait to get into this story. Because everybody thought that it was going to be a movie. And it became a movie, so it was kind of a self-fulfilling philosophy, or it was a self-fulfilling prophecy. But that was before the internet took advantage. This was 1981.
Okay, should I start my own religion then, before promoting
the
book?
You can start your own religion.
I really
want to
be rich.
Now, being famous because of your religion is another thing where you're building your mythology. Everybody is saying, mm-hmm. hey, you're big and you're also smart. And you know, the farther west of the Mississippi that you go, with the exception of the Rockies and the West Coast, the easier it is to get believers. I mean, from Utah to Denver to Waco, you can do what you want. All right, I'm not slamming literature, I'm not slamming the holy texts or anything that's written, but remember, how to get followers is not exactly oral tradition anymore. If you get it down and you actually, I mean, this is the reason where people who are literate are venerated, is because they can hand down their ideas mm-hmm. for generations. As long as we keep people literate, they'll understand what you're saying. That's why people are... yeah. People... The big deal is that this is your word, and it will outlive you. I mean, who disputes that Frank Herbert is now bigger than life? And it's a legacy that you leave without having kids. It's an amazing kind of thing. So it's one of those things where you can build it. And, I mean, Hubbard took full advantage of that when he did that. I mean, people loved his stuff. And who was it? Whitley Strieber. Same thing. I mean, everything you think about in the way of trying to get your name out, some people do reprehensible stuff.
Yeah.
You know? And some people innovate, and some people take advantage of the best free technology, the fastest free technology mm-hmm. in the way of the internet. And for me, I'm kind of halfway between those two. I'm a bit of a traditionalist, too, and it shows, because I put together a radio show where I could tell my stuff. I could narrate my own stuff. But I also had the brains to realize that it was not something that it was going to be me. It's not going to be the All Freon channel. If it was the All Freon channel, people would turn it off. Well, people turn it off now anyway. But it's I don't make it my way or the highway type of thing. It is also a community thing. Everything that I do, I kind of start and feed out, and everybody... he stays interested in it because it is quality stuff. And, you know, the fringe benefit is that, yeah, I started it, big deal. But I have a book, too. You know, stuff like that.
Other stuff you can do. You can't discount the importance of word-of-mouth stuff. One of the first things I did the day my book went on sale was I sent an email to everyone I know and said, my book's on sale.
Yep.
This is what it is. Here's the website. If you know anyone who likes this, forward this email. Granted, that's still internet stuff, but... people still talk about it. I mean, I had like 4 or 5 sales that day just from that type of right. things. And another thing, too, a lot of learn how to write a press release that you can send to the newspapers and that type of stuff. If you're having a signing, or if you're just going to be somewhere to talk about whatever, send a newspaper press release. You know, an email version of it doesn't cost you anything. You have nothing to lose. I mean, I've gotten into the Detroit Free Press and the Lansing State Journal just by sending out a press release about, like, the first time I did National Novel Writing Month and I, you know, was a finisher,
I sent out a press release to the Free Press, and I got interviewed by the Free Press. You know, yeah, didn't cost me a dime, and I got press.
To say nothing of the fact that like 60, 70,000 people finish a novel, yeah, every NaNoWriMo. I mean,
yeah, but,
it's news because he wrote it, yeah, and he gave it to the newspaper, and yeah, they, you know, they distributed it.
You're making their job easier for them because you're saying, look, here's a story. Like, okay, so they just have to call me and get a few, you know, quotes.
Yeah, this is no longer a slow news day.
Yeah. And like, you know, if I have a signing coming up, a lot of, like, if you have local free newspapers, like, and Lansing has, like, the Noise and the City Pulse or, you know, or indie newspapers.
Did you do PR Web release, a PR Web thing? Because I had PR Web, like, 10 years ago. I was announcing PenguinCon 1.0, some new techie plus science fiction fandom convention that I was helping to run way back in, I don't know, what was it, 2002? Something called PenguinCon. Anyway, that was, I started a PR Web account to start.
Is that a site?
Media, it's a convention someplace. Okay. Where was it? The first time around? I think somewhere in Michigan. Anyway, so, I mean, you take advantage of all of this stuff you learn. excuse me. The press releases, all it is what you want to say, except in third person. Mm-hmm. Just imitate somebody who's interviewing yourself. I mean, it sounds kind of, you don't like promoting yourself, but you have to eventually, because especially if you're a small press or a self-published person.
And something about that too, like the first time I got in the Lansing State Journal, they took my press release and like changed one or two things, and that's it, and they reprinted the whole thing. But it was fine because I ended up. I'll make this a quick story. I was stopping at the Claire Welcome Center up in northern Michigan, and they had freebies, you know, stuff you could give out. So I asked, "Can I leave some of my, you know, cards?" And they said, "Well, do you have any copies of your book? You could, you know, leave them here, and because we do monthly giveaways." I'm like, "I have some in my trunk. I'll give them to you." So I gave them over to them.
Store Incorporated.
And they did a monthly giveaway where they gave one out a month for people who signed out a survey. And so I sent a press release to Lansing State Journal saying this, and they basically just reprinted the same thing. Mm-hmm. And
can I interrupt?
Just one quick thing before I forget this thought. what I was saying about the free local newspaper stuff, if they have like an event calendar thing where they say, "Send us your event," and you have an event or a signing, a speech, just send it in, and it's free advertising. Okay, yep. Go.
Okay, just to touch on one point, send them to the websites that the blogs that cover the news and whatever area you're writing or whatever you're promoting, because they're always looking for content.
Yeah.
And a word that's popping up that we haven't really singled out is free.
Free, yeah.
To give things free to people that you can give a sample chapter online if you're a writer.
Yeah, MP3s, sir.
I got a new audiobook novel, my t-shirt here, Starborn by Andre Norton. The first chapter is free online. And then, of course, I got the podcast, which has free content all the time.
You definitely have to choose your freebies wisely.
Yes.
If you are prolific with the MP3s and your production's great, give one away, go on a rotation too, perhaps, if you want to, but don't have them subscribe to the point where, like, by the end of the year, they have everything you've ever produced free, because that's kind of counterproductive. And as far as I'm concerned, you know, I have flyers that are out there at the table right now that have 3-4 paragraphs from each of my stories on a rotation on the flyer on the backside. So people actually have a writing sample without me having to stand in front and read it like I'm going to have to do at 11 o'clock with a sore throat. So anytime...
it's 10 o'clock.
My reading's 10 o'clock?
Yeah, the from the ground up.
Oh, yeah, right. It's okay. 10 o'clock. There's something else. You guys, take a look at the program book.
Because I'm there with you.
Take a look at the program book. I was scheduled 9, 10, 11, 12. Yesterday, 9, 10, 11, 12. Today,
I'm like, someone really likes you.
Try to kill me. No, that's fine. I can deal with it. As you can see, no badge. I have not had time to register.
Do we have any...
I have not had time to register.
We got about 10 minutes left, so any other questions?
My biggest problem is I will be at a con. I will have a booth selling my book, and people will be there looking at it, interested, but I don't know what to tell them to get them to buy it.
Well, I'm still figuring that out,
too.
Have
a panel.
Yeah.
Basically, the combination is go to a convention, see everything there is to see, and have a bit of everything. Have something to do with everything. Mm-hmm. I mean, a little bit. You know, be a panel and be up front table once out of the convention. And at the tail end of it, 50 people will know, hey, you come out to the table. And it's pretty viral from that, because if you have 6 people in front of your table, pretty soon it'll be 30, because everybody's wandering around looking for the interesting things to do at your table. That's pretty much it. For every event that you're at, find an angle that looks different from everywhere you look at it, but it still ends up with you in the center of it.
Yeah.
And it happens to a lot of people. People have magnetic personalities. People have other people gravitate to them. People have huge circles of friends. But it got that way for a reason. It got that way because they knew where to be. Program where you are going to be in the try to get yourself into the middle of the action. I mean, it doesn't mean parading around naked at the masquerade. You certainly don't have to do that. But
question in the back.
There's a. I wish I could remember the name of it. This is going to sound terrible. It's like telling a joke without knowing the punchline. There's a website where you can basically kind of set up a contract with the public to say, if I get this much money, I'll do this. And I remember reading about somebody who, and I don't remember his name either. I don't know any of the information, but I got a great story.
Circumspect.com. Circumspect.com. He operates under a pseudo. His name is That Guy.
Yeah,
I know that one. Okay. He does some thing.
Well,
it's famous.
The idea is, it's kind of like a contract with the public where you say, if I get this much money, then I'll do this. And somebody raised tens of thousands of dollars, I think it might have been more than $100,000, to write a book and then release it for free. And, you know, a whole bunch of people showed up, donated small amounts of money, and ended up with a book for free as a result of it. And I think that the more I'm listening to this, the more I'm thinking, you know, that sort of thing probably is more the way to go if you want to work yourself up from grassroots rather than the sending manuscripts to publishers kind of approach.
Yeah, everything is an experiment.
Yeah.
And there's a balancing act that you go between, because when the traditional publishers have stuff, or when you're trying to court traditional publishers, you have to have a different approach to that. And some people in brick and mortar are saying, hey, you're taking too many shortcuts. This is just a fad. This is a fad. But remember, fads make people rich. Some people rich.
They do.
But you got to do it only once. There's only a couple of things, some gimmick or a stunt that works out great for 1 year, 2 years, the third year. No one's going to be able to do anything with it. I did fundraisers. Every convention I go to, I have some involvement with the fundraiser. And there's this very strong influence from other people that say, you know, we know other people who are in need, who need to promote themselves. Can we do the same thing next year? Feel free, but it's not going to be that successful. Because you're talking about something that borders on a fad. You take advantage of it because you thought of it, sure, but don't do it every year. And don't have other people try to do it every year. They should be able to do so, but, you know, don't hold your breath about it being anywhere near as successful.
Do you have an example of what you're talking about? Mm-hmm.
Oh, do I have a fundraising example? Sure. I mean, the first time that we did, the founder of PenguinCon, the person who actually put this convention together, her name's Tracy Worcester. She partnered with Rob Landley to put PenguinCon on the map, bring Terry Pratchett over here. Well, she got a thyroid cancer diagnosis a couple years afterwards, so she couldn't actually work the convention for PenguinCon 3. I think it was in 2005. But that month, this is the year after my book launched, I put together a fundraiser where we basically raffled off a bunch of people. Proceeds to the book went out, ran flyers, and I said, you know, this is one of my dearest and nearest friends. She's like completely, she's penniless now. Her car's broke down, thyroid cancer surgery. She can't even make it to the convention. And we just knocked down all the walls, the entire convention. I devoted the entire convention. I mean, the book sales drive, the campaign for marketing for 2005 for my book stopped. I basically said, hey, buy the book, but every dime goes to Tracy's treatment, pays her rent and all of this stuff. We're going to have raffles. We raised like $2,500 overall for that. And that was like 5 weeks worth of fundraising.
We got a question over here,
yep.
I think.
At some point, all of you were just starting,
mm-hmm.
just beginning. And some of us, maybe many of us, are not involved stuff you can really put on the internet because it's a fairly local thing. Do you have some ideas for those people?
Do you want to start?
I'll pass it on to you.
Okay.
Mine's more global.
Okay. Like I said, I did stuff where I donated things to libraries, and I always offer, I say, I'll come in and talk about writing, I'll talk about publishing, I'll talk about whatever, just, you know, give me a forum, and, you know, they'll have me come in, I'll come in. Just find local things you can hook up with, you know, local, maybe other writing groups, or...
Can I ask you what kind of product are we talking about?
Yeah.
All those people that can plug in their computer and can't do anything else, they can program it, they couldn't change a board if their life depended on it. If their dog unplugs the cord, they think their computer's
You might could do like a volunteer program at like a library or something. Mm-hmm. Just get involved in the community, maybe senior centers.
There are a lot more libraries than you think there are.
Yeah, there's a lot of libraries.
A lot more.
And there's a lot of senior groups, and believe it or not,
and they're literate too. They're quite literate too. Seniors are quite literate.
Oh,
so
yeah.
My 85-year-old grandmother reads every day.
Yeah,
she
tears
through books.
Many of them view the computer as this new invention just short of the television.
Well, you put that into the marketing campaign somehow to alleviate their fears or whatever. If that's the
identify.
If that's the audience you're trying to reach.
Yeah, just identify with them and say, we know that you're afraid of this.
Yeah.
And this is why. Part of it is you shouldn't have the fear, and we'll explain why. And
we'll
make it free.
The fear out of computers,
fear
you,
out of it,
you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I would do.
And relate yourself as like one of them.
Do we have any?
Not that you're afraid of computers, but you were one of them or something like that.
Any other last questions? We got about 3 minutes, I think.
Make it fast.
Or we could just do closing statements or whatever. Do you want to? Anything else you want to wrap up?
Who's actively marketing? Who else is actively marketing?
We got a question back there.
Okay.
Open sourcing some of your work, good, bad, or indifferent?
I think it, falling along the lines of free, it's a very good idea if you have some kind of product. If it leads to another something you're selling, you know, and it's related, maybe you have the restricted version that's still very useful. Don't put a restricted version. It sucks. Nobody wants that. But if you have something that's very functional and people who need it for a higher level and you sell, I think it's a very good idea. I think it's a great idea.
Mm-hmm. I would say when it comes to writing, though, if you're publishing anything, make sure you put the extra effort in to get it really copyrighted through the government. I mean, it's that was like the first thing I did when I was done with this, because legally, if you write something down, it's copyright. But I know this is kind of getting a little off the open source thing, but just because it's reminding me of it, just go to copyright.org, you send them a copy of your stuff, fill out a form, pay a little bit of money, and if something happens, if Dan Brown steals your story and adapts it in the next Da Vinci Code book, you can say, hey, wait a second, I wrote this 4 years ago.
We'll,
you know,
settle for $50,000.
Yeah, you know.
We'll settle.
But,
hey, I know.
As far as open source stuff, I think there's definitely good sides and bad sides. Just make sure you protect yourself. Don't leave yourself open for someone to take advantage of your things. And my biggest fear is someone taking my stuff and, you know, putting swear words in it and saying, look, this is a book. He has bad words in it, and he's marketing it to children. That's my biggest fear, you know. But
yeah, I mean, this is like flash fiction, or not flash fiction, but slash fiction.
Slash
fanfics.
Yeah.
You're always victimized by fanfic, but what are you going to do? You're popular enough for people, your household name, so that you can't do anything.
I don't think there's a downside to fanfiction.
Right? No, I don't. I'd be...
Now, as far as open sourcing, mm-hmm. when you're a literary source, you think along the lines of a proprietary... intellectual property. It is my property. I would go through whatever hoops to make sure that my creative influence is 100% on it. But open sourcing this stuff, it all depends on how prolific you are. If I've written 15 books, I think maybe half of one book could probably be open sourced safely. If I do 2 novels and 4 short story collections with 7 stories each, maybe an entire short story collection could be open sourced. And everybody would love it, and I could be a champion of open source. But, you know, my novel, I can't put the whole novel out there. I'm investing too much in just one. But remember, our product is the stories. And I can turn out stories. So I'm not going to... I'll take a loss on it and make a profit on volume. We're still making a profit. I got to eat. So, I mean, nothing that I ever write is going to teach anybody anything except how to enjoy my writing and buy another book. I've made up my mind that that's the way it's going to be when I start marketing stuff seriously. But in terms of open sourcing it to get your word out, yeah, no problem. If you're open sourcing it because it's a philosophy or you're starting a religion and you're, you know, Hubbard Jr.,
mm-hmm.
I think that Dianetics should be open source. I think that stuff should be put out because it's a philosophy, right? If you want, and Scientology, all of that stuff, it should be perfectly free for the taking. And Scientology wouldn't make any money at all because it is a religion. And if it's protected by tax laws. So, I mean, if you have something to say that you know is going to further civilization faster than it furthers yourself, go ahead and open source it, because you're going to be saying more words later on. It's just that you don't want to say you're the only it would really suck if you were an author who went on to be famous as an author who only did open source stuff, because he starved to death 7 years ago. You know, there's no way. There isn't any way. So unless it's a new stunt, and you can probably only do it once.
Okay, well, I think we're just about out of time. So I guess, unless you have anything else you want to close
with. If you're a self-published author, I would recommend you look into Podio Books. Chris Miller was here.
Podio?
Just Podio Books.
Podio.
Not with a T.
Podio.
Okay. Which is like making your own audiobook and putting it out there for free. There's some authors that are making it. Scott Sigler is published by
Scott's,
Random House,
yeah.
I think, now. He started out as an audiobook author.
Really?
J.C. Hutchins,
and
Seven Sons,
self-published
Scott
people.
Did, was his, started first, his first book was like Earthcore, and I was reading that in beta on Warner Brothers' website.
Yeah,
when they were trying the new
time.
Stuff.
No, he's big time.
Cool. Yeah, he's big time right now. Could have been me.
I guess I'll just close with just, you know, don't be mean to people. Be nice, because that's what especially on the small level, if you're independent people, they remember if you're nice or not. If someone has been for signing, send them a thank you card. That they like that. Just, you know, be polite. And, you know, don't be afraid to try, you know, giving cards out to people or leaving them in restaurants, or if you go to a coffee shop that has like a free bookshelf. I've done that. I've left a copy of my book at a coffee house, you know, bookshelf.
Oops.
Yeah, exactly. just
book crossing.
Don't be a jerk. That's the rule number one. You have anything else you want to close with?
Very, very simple. What he was saying, be honest, be true to yourself, be very, very nice. And just when you have the center of attention and you have an audience in front of you and everybody's watching, close, you know, simply say, just say nothing but good things about me, because the word of mouth is viral and people say, hey, he's got a winning smile, and I think he's single too, so that happens, unbelievable things, they snowball. You know, I'm happily married, but I'm going to walk up and I'm going to say, hey, you know, I'm kind of easy on the eyes, even though I'm... So, I mean, yeah, this, you guys can... All right.
Okay.
Well, I just lost my market. Thanks for coming.
Yes, thank
Sorry
you.
Sorry I was so late.
Thank you.
Hey, how about getting your book banned? Is that, how's that for self-promotion?
I'd love it. If my book got banned, that'd be great. I would.
Well, you
got
to put in all the swear words.
Yeah, little kids.
Yeah,
that's true.
Kids have to put together a suit.